everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me all over the place at Hawk Blogger, including here on YouTube, where I hope you are enjoying this episode today. But wherever you are, I hope you're having a great Wednesday. We are due for, I think, some sunny weather in Seattle, maybe some overcast skies, but it's going to be warm. And then we might get a thunderstorm, which, you know, those are always interesting here in the Northwest. We don't get them nearly as much as those of you who are down in the South. But yeah, going to be an interesting day. And it was a lot of fun yesterday celebrating the episode 365 with all of you. Hopefully everyone's getting their prizes and gifts that we were able to give out. We gave out 10 $25 gift cards to Pagliacci Pizza. Thank you again to Pat over at Pagliacci and Pagliacci Pizza for providing those gift cards and mailing them out. Very, very nice of them. And they've been a great supporter of the show, giving us Robert Mays all through the season, and really looking forward to continuing to work with them. And then JK Boots, who not only do they have this unbelievable deal going on where you use code HawkBlogger and you get $75 off whatever, you know, boots you buy, and we give $15 to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation, but they gave away 20 different items yesterday: leather wallets, hats like the one I'm wearing, shirts, hoodies, all sorts of stuff to 20 audience members who've been supporting the show. So hopefully you guys all enjoyed that. I saw some people also take advantage of the deal over at Redbubble. If you want to go to hawkblogger.com, you see a link for HB merch. You can get there and decide to buy shirts, hoodies, you know, all sorts of stuff if you're interested. I've lowered the prices as much as I possibly can, and I think they're having a 25% off deal as well. So hopefully all of you that wanted to got to benefit in some way from that celebration yesterday. And if nothing else, it was great to hear from Dave Bowling, Mike Sando, Sam Monson, and all of you yesterday. That was fun. That was fun. Today, we've got some news. We've got some news, and it's in the dollars and cents part of the Seahawks land. We've been waiting for a while to hear about what the actual details were going to be on the Cooper Kupp contract, as well as the Sam Darnold contract. We still don't have the DeMarcus Lawrence contract either, but we do, as of this morning, have details on both the Cooper Kupp deal and the Sam Darnold deal. And it's still like it's fresh enough that all the sites, all the contract sites, have not fully updated with all the information, but it is worth kind of spending a few minutes going over it with all of you. So let's do that right off the jump. First thing I'll just notice here, and this might change even during the show, is that over the cap, which is, I think, the standard, not I think, it is the standard for contract information. That site SpoTrack, by the way, rips off over the cap. They like screen scrape this site and they don't do any of their own stuff and they rip them off, and often it's wrong. So beware of SpoTrack. But the guys at over the cap are the best and the ones that are most reliable. But I will notice here that you'll see that their team cap space right now lists for the Seahawks $55.6 million in cap space. That is because they have not yet, if I scroll all the way down, you will see that the Sam Darnold deal has not posted on their team version of the site. But if I take you over to the Sam Darnold specific page, it has posted. So we have the details for the Sam Darnold deal. And credit to Derek Gebby, who was madly refreshing and caught this morning. I don't know that this has even been released everywhere else, but these are the Sam Darnold contract details. We've got $5.3 million base salary in 2025. They've got a signing bonus here of $32 million prorated over, they've got two void years on this deal to basically stretch out that signing bonus an additional couple years, which lowers the cap hit this year even further. And then he's got a workout bonus and he's got $1.5 million in other bonuses. He's guaranteed $5.5 million in salary this year, obviously plus the signing bonus stuff. So his cap number ends up being $13.4 million this year, which is 4.7% of the cap. That is a pretty good deal for your quarterback. And if he turns out to be anywhere near the player he was last year, that is a screaming deal for your quarterback. The other thing that's always important to look at when you come over here to over the cap is these dead money columns and cap savings. And so he, you see this $37.5 million this year. If he was cut, they would give him $37.5 million. He's get do that no matter what in year one. We've heard that number prior. They would actually lose cap if they cut him this year. They're not going to cut him this year, so it doesn't matter. But getting into next year, if they moved on from Sam Darnold, they would have a $25 million dead money hit. So it is not appealing in any way, shape, or form for them to move on from Sam Darnold after 1 year. They would save $8.3 million in cap space if they did it. So there is some flexibility after year one. I don't think this is a one-year deal. I read this as a two-year deal with Sam Darnold. And the reality is, even if he is still with the team as a backup, you know, that contract will have been 11.5% of the cap space. That's more. But the only reason he wouldn't be starting next year would be if they had a rookie quarterback or a quarterback on a rookie deal starting for them instead. And so that guy's contract, whatever it is going to be very small relative to this. So they'll have a very affordable quarterback contract situation the next couple of years, no matter what. And then year three, that's when things will kind of, I mean, that's the last year of the deal. That's when things get real or they say goodbye. In that year of the deal, his base salary goes up to $35 million. He has, by the way, is a $15 million roster bonus next year. So that's a chance for him to get them to get out of the deal a little bit earlier, by the way, and probably with less of a dead money hit. Then in 2027, they also have a $10 million roster bonus. So again, a way to get out of that deal. And his cap number rises all the way to $44.9 million in year three. They would still have $19 million in dead money if they cut him after 3 years, but they would save almost $26 million against the cap if they decided to move on after, you know, before the third year the deal really hits. So this is a good contract, at least from my perspective, for the Seahawks. I think well negotiated, puts them in a really good spot this year and puts them in position to have flexibility in the coming years. But I think this contract was built with the intention of Sam Darnold being with this team for at least a couple of years. And I think all Seahawks fans should be hoping that, you know, that not only is he here a couple of years, you'd have to hope that he's here for a contract beyond the one he signed. Like, you have to hope he is the player he was last year and better. Then that would be a good thing for both Sam Darnold and for the Seahawks. But his contract was not the only one that was announced. Cooper Kupp's deal also has been announced. Here it is. Here's the detail on that deal. So Cooper Kupp, you know, had signed that 3-year deal. It was rumored to be $45 million per year. If you look at this, the thing that kind of stands out here is his cap number in 2025, this year, is under $10 million. $9.3 million, 3.3% of the cap. If you get into the 2026 part of the deal, there is a $8 million dead money hit if you cut him before June 1st, but you also save $9.5 million. So this deal really for me reads with the signing bonus, which is $12 million, no void years on this deal. So $12 million signing bonus. This is really a, you know, $17.5 million guaranteed deal. And I think you can get out of this after 1 year with relatively little impact, you know, to your cap and with the dead money. Yes, $8 million is no joke, but you're also talking about a $9.5 million cap saving. So Cooper Kupp's going to have to be a player that's worth this money in order to stay on the Seahawks and stay with this contract. I think it's worth kind of spending a second talking about some other wide receiver deals that were signed. And let me pull up, I'm going to pull up some wide receiver contracts here that we can look at. And as we look at this, let me zoom in so you have a chance in heck of seeing any of this. All right. So this is sorted by average per year right now. All right. And so Jamar Chase is at the top, $40 million. Justin Jefferson, 35. DK Metcalf, 33. No, thank you. I bet he's going to have some fun talking to AJ Brown about the fact that he beat his APY. But then as you scroll, Cooper Kupp's all the way down here. His APY is $15 million a year. And I think the thing that I want to kind of pay attention to, this is Davante Adams, similar age, signed with the Rams. He's actually a year older than Cooper Kupp, $22 million APY. All right. Cooper Kupp, yes, it's $15 million a year, but I think it's actually, you know, it's going to work out potentially to less than that. That's right around guys like Cortland Sutton. You know, there's guys, Tutu Atwell signed a $10 million deal. Dyami Brown signed a $10 million deal. Josh Palmer signed a $10 million a year deal. So I think that Cooper Kupp's right around what he should be. Now, good for him. I think he's probably worth a little bit less than this if he's got the same injury issues that he's had. But relative to the market, I think it's a completely reasonable deal that the Seahawks signed Cooper Kupp to. And they've got plenty of flexibility with how to handle this going forward. So I'm going to refresh just in case they've. Oh, they did. Look at that. They've updated. That's why refreshing is a good thing. So as it stands now with the Cooper Kupp deal, with the Sam Darnold deal registering on over the cap, the Seahawks stand at $43 million in remaining cap space. And remember, this does not include the DeMarcus Lawrence deal. It does not include, let's see, I'll show you which deals it does not include. River Craycraft, Anthony Bell, Eric Saubert, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence is the one that will have some meaningful impact on that cap. But really, you're talking about, I would guess, like mid-30s in remaining cap space. And if we look at where teams stand with remaining cap space, let me share this with you all. What you get is the Seahawks right now with the fifth most cap space in the NFL. I think that'll drop down into probably around where the Chargers, Jaguars are, around $35 million after these other contracts post. So you're still going to have the Seahawks with, you know, more cap space than most teams in the NFL when all of this has registered. So Seahawks in I think, a good situation right now. I think Joey Lane, the guy that they brought in to manage contracts, seems to be doing a nice job with the contracts that they're negotiating. And, you know, people can debate whether these deal, like the players are the good players to sign or not. fact of the matter is the contracts that they've signed, I think, are pretty solid. So that's kind of the update on contract info. The other thing that I'd say that's not Seahawks specific, but there is another contract that came out that I think is worth, you know, understanding as a Seahawk fan, that the Seahawks were interested, or at least they took a visit from Tevin Jenkins, the Bears offensive lineman. Tevin Jenkins initially, actually, I'm going to pull this up because I'm very curious. PFF's free agent projections, and their projection for Tevin Jenkins was a 3-year deal for $40 million with $24 million guaranteed. They projected $13.3 million as the APY for Tevin Jenkins. Well, he signed with the Browns for 1 year, $3.05 million. So, as I said multiple times, if the Seahawks wanted Tevin Jenkins, they could have had Tevin Jenkins. And I think that tells you what the league thinks of Tevin Jenkins. I think it's a shot across the bow for his career. If he's going to prove that he loves the sport and that he's tough enough to work through some of these injuries. You heard from Clint Kubiak when he talked on the day he was signed with the Seahawks that one of the things that they do to really evaluate toughness in players is how do they work through nicks and bumps and scratches. Not obviously you don't want players to play through a real injury, but are these guys grinding day in, day out, or do they sit out? And Tevin Jenkins has a reputation of a guy that taps out quite a bit. That reputation has taken him from what was a projected $40 million contract to a 1 year, $3 million contract. NFL doesn't kid around with that stuff. And that's in a league that is desperate for the position that he plays. And he's pretty good at it when he's on the field. So that just gives you some idea of how much there are questions about Tevin Jenkins and whether or not you want him in your locker room, whether you want him as part of your offensive line. I think we still, you know, cross our fingers, hope maybe that the Seahawks will pull something, you know, a rabbit out of the hat with a Wyatt Teller trade or something like that. Probably not. But that would be a fun thing if that could happen and give the Seahawks at least one guard signing that people would feel good about. So contracts, those are where we're at. We're at with the contracts. A couple programming notes. There will not be a Real Hawk Talk tonight. Given the folks the night off, I'll actually be out this evening, so I won't be able to do that either. But we will definitely have one next week. Other programming notes. So I told you yesterday we were going to have Jalen Knoll on Friday on the show, and that was the plan. But unfortunately, Mr. Knoll has some pre-draft visits he needs to make on Friday. So we're trying to reschedule for next week. I will let you know when and if that can get rescheduled. I'm also trying to get Jaden Higgins on the show as well, working out. Again, right now is a tough time to get these guys because they're flying around the country on these visits. But we'll do my best to try to bring some of these personalities to you guys so you can get to know them the way I feel like I've gotten to know some of them as well. All right. We have got some super chats, so let me get to those. HawkManiac09 says, congratulations, Brian, and welcome to year two, everyone. I'm dedicating this super chat to Old School Seahawk and Amy for their positive energy. Go Hawks. Let's get Emin Wari, Donovan Jackson, or Jared Wilson and Tate Ratledge in the second. Well, love that and absolutely agree with you on Old School and Amy being such a great supportive and positive part of our chat and community. So thank you for that. And then Italian Night, there's 50 Hawk Blogger memberships. So appreciative of, you know, your continued generosity, bringing more and more people into the fold. This is great. And really, really appreciate it. Huge, huge contribution to bring all these great folks in. If you get one of these free memberships, consider upgrading, get access to the Discord channel where people are going to have you know, ongoing conversations between shows, during shows. When we get to the season, you talk about the games, live game threads. It's a really fun place to hang out. So club level and higher gets you access to the Discord channel, or go over to patreon.com/hawkblogger. That also gets you access to the Discord channel. So there was a couple other things that are random. They're just random, and I'm going to tell you about them anyway because I was kind of curious. I reference Pro Football Focus a lot just because there's just not a lot of other things that give you a stable grade of how they see different players. Even if it's poorly done, they grade every player the same way, and so it's at least a measure to look at. But I felt like the Seahawks offensive line, especially in run blocking, played better late in the year last year. PFF didn't really agree with that. And so I went back and I looked. And specifically for me, the team seemed to run better once Satawalamea entered the lineup and Anthony Bradford exited the lineup. That also happened to be about three games after Abe Lucas had come back as well. So I went back and I looked at a couple of things. And from week 13 on, which is when Satawalamea entered the lineup, the Seahawks ranked eighth in the NFL in yards per carry. Eighth in the NFL in yards per carry. And they ranked seventh in the NFL in rushing EPA. Again, weeks 13 on. They had ranked, by comparison, 30th in the NFL in rush EPA before Satawalamea was in the lineup playing next to Abe Lucas. And so while PFF has absolutely atrocious grades for Satawalamea, like 17 and 35, like really bad grades, I felt like I saw something in the way he played. I saw him move people in ways that I had not seen other guys move people. And, you know, yes, it's a small sample size. There's other things to be done, but that's without even having really instituted a consistent, cohesive running attack with, I think, you know, an offensive line staff that goes beyond, you know, Scott Huff and Brendan Nugent, to have guys with even more experience, especially in the NFL, doing it. And with those guys like Satawalamea, Christian Haynes, Jalen Sundell, all rookies, Oluolu Timi playing in really his first year as a starter, there's reasons to believe those guys will make meaningful steps in year two, or year two as a starter, or year two getting significant playing time. So that was one thing, kind of a random thing that I just was looking up this morning. And the other thing that I was playing around with is, I'll do probably more on this, another show, but Field Vision, which is a company based out of Portland, started by Scott, I think it's Buska, who, former agent, worked at Nike, has been doing some cool things. Anyway, they've released a new like Field Vision Pro, which gives you a view into different kinds of stats. And I'll share more of this another time, but there were some interesting pieces for Kobe Bryant. And I think what I did here is I did, starting when Kobe Bryant became a starter in week 7, the Seahawks safeties, Julian Love ranked third among all safeties in pass breakups across that period of time. So third among all safeties in pass breakups. And Kobe Bryant ranked 13th. So you had almost two of the top 10 in the NFL in pass breakups at the safety position once he started playing. And the other one that I was kind of looking at from a safety situation, if you looked at snaps per target and snaps per reception, Kobe Bryant was a top 20 safety. Now, remember, safeties, you're going to have at least 62 starting safeties in the NFL. A lot of teams end up playing three safeties. So you're talking about, 96 safeties getting a lot of time. So a top 20 safety is pretty good. And that's where Kobe Bryant was when he started playing, as a full-time starter. The other thing that I found when I was looking at this, where was it? This was back to the running thing. So Zach Charbonnet, over that period of time from week 13 on, let me pull this up, make sure I've got the right numbers here, and I will show you what I am seeing here in a second. Make sure this is the right thing, and then I'll pull it up for you. But, all right, well, I'll share my screen here. Why not? If you take a look at this, I'll make it bigger for you. Take a look at this. This is Zach Charbonnet right here. Oops, that is not what I wanted to do. All right, good. That didn't cause chaos. So Zach Charbonnet is right here. From week 13 on, he ranked 11th in EPA per 100 snaps, and he ranked 13th in success rate. If you go over the course of the season, Seahawks running backs were all down here in the lower left quadrant. So again, they had some success later in the year. One of the things that's also interesting here is if you go to, you can limit by different defense personnel. If you go to them running against, let's go nickel and dime defenses, which I think the Seahawks saw a fair amount of. And I think specifically nickel is where they saw most things. Zach Charbonnet comes all the way over here. He ranked fourth in success rate and ninth in EPA per 100 carries. So I think that's interesting that, Charbonnet was doing pretty well there. This is a yards per carry versus yards per contact per carry. Also kind of curious about this one. Remember, Kenneth Walker was hurt during a lot of this, so he doesn't have, I don't think, the requisite snaps. Oops. Well, it didn't, did it? Hold on a second. Let's try that again. This is in beta, by the way, so I'm getting early access. I'm not surprised if there's things that are not quite working properly yet. Oh, I think what's happening is that there's not enough. Here, let me add back, select all. Add back base defense. I don't think it likes that yet. Oh, well, I'll continue playing around with it. I'll probably bring Scott on the show, let him give us a tour. We'll kind of look around at these things. But a cool little app that I plan to familiarize myself with. In fact, I'm still doing it, even though I'm talking to you all, because I can't help myself but play with these things. let's see if we go to Rush EPA. Yeah. Well, here, I'll show you guys what I was just looking at here in case you're curious. So this is looking again from week 13 on, and you can see the Seahawks here ranking in basically the top 10 in rushing success rate and rushing EPA once Satawa Lamea was on the field. So I don't know. It's, it's a hopeful thought, but something that caught my attention. I figured I'd share. I think that's going to do it today, folks. There's not a lot going on, so we're not going to invent things that aren't happening. I appreciate, again, everybody that was supportive of the show yesterday. As I said yesterday, I am not going to be a slave to the streak. This will not be I can almost guarantee you we will not go another 365 straight days of this show, but there'll almost always be something new. And one of the things that I plan on doing to take advantage of this is I felt like I didn't have as much time to do deep research that I like to do when I was doing a show every morning. So there might be days where I just sit there and do research and write an article on a day instead of doing a HB Mornings, or maybe I do that. And then if I feel like it, I'll do an HB Mornings after. But I do want to kind of get back to one of the things that I think I do best, which is getting into some of the details on research and writing as well as doing the show. So I'm going to try to do a little bit better of a mix of that this year, and we'll see how that goes. Again, no real Hawk Talk tonight, but you know, I'm sure I will be back with you guys tomorrow, and we'll continue having some fun. Hopefully you guys get out. It's looking kind of gray right now, but hopefully you enjoyed the sun yesterday. I certainly did. And there'll be more to talk about very soon. I will be heading to Palm Beach, Florida, Sunday to travel to the owners meeting. First time I'll have gone there. I will certainly go live from there. I'll be talking to Mike McDonald. I'll be talking to John Schneider, talking probably to Burt Cold, maybe Jody Allen, who knows who else. I'll only be there for a very short time, but I'm going to try to, you know, get as much quality time with people as I can while I'm there. So keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, make sure you give the show a like, click subscribe. Let's keep pushing up. We want to get to 18,000 subscribers. We want to get up to 20,000 subscribers. We're just past 17 now, and let's keep going. So take care, everybody. Appreciate all you. Have a great rest of your day. This has been another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Take care.